since we were dealing with the point of Bechira, so Rabbeinu Yonah was talking about the idea of free will. So I don't want to go through it at length, because actually the area of Bechira, the question of Bechira, is a philosophical question, and it's really not something that it's not something that should be dealt with in a public way. You know, Chazal have a halacha. The Mishnah says in Chagiga that the Ein Darshim Amaisa Merkava B'Yachid and Ein Darshim Amaisa Bereshis B'Rabim. So certain areas can't be spoken about in public, only privately, because they're philosophical areas, and people will walk away with misconceptions. So Chazal were very cautious, very careful that you shouldn't discuss certain things that can cause people to have false ideas. But the area of Bechira is definitely one of those areas. An area that's a metaphysical area, and it's not an area that should be dealt with in public. And of course, the reason is that one has to be very sure that the people that he's speaking with are on the proper level, and they won't come to any false conclusions. Of course, that's a very difficult thing, because most people feel that they're on the level to understand any area. And it's really one of the principles of Yahadus is that a person should recognize, should know his own limitations, his own intellectual limitations, and shouldn't venture into philosophy beyond the area of his abilities. And it's something which is extremely dangerous. The Rambam speaks about it as Hakdama to the Mara, and in the Mara itself also. So a person in his zeal for knowledge must have, it's a difficult thing, but he must have, Chazal warned us that a person in his zeal for knowledge must have a certain inner sense, like an inner barometer, to know exactly how far he could go, and not to try to go beyond his abilities. He has to be satisfied with not delving into certain areas that he's not equipped to handle. It's a very difficult thing, because usually the person who isn't equipped to handle it isn't mature enough to recognize his own shortcomings. You see, but it's really one of the yesodas and yadas. And we spoke about it when the Rama mentions in the pasuk Vosurcha Levavcha Einechem, which means to say that a person shouldn't delve into an area where he is liable to come to emotional conclusions, as he's not capable of handling the area in a totally intellectual way. That's why it says Losura Lavavchem. Lavchem means the heart, means the emotions. Achrein Einechem, and after what you see, means the attachment to sight, means the attachment to the physical. So a person must always have that sense that he, in pursuing knowledge, it's extremely important for a person to have that inner sense that he knows his own limitations, and he has the humility to recognize that certain areas are not for him to tackle, not for him to venture into. That's really the halacha of by Maimon Har Sinai, where there are different groups, set up in different groups, insofar as how close they can approach the Har. The Balta Sahar Sava Lamar. So there are different groups, three different classes. And the closest one, of course, is Moshe Rabbeinu. And then it went in lower classes to the rest of Klal Yisrael. And Yisokel, Yisokel, or Yoro, Yoro, Yoro. That there was a Chiv Misa, basically, and anyone that Tishamu Lacham Me'alos Bahar Nagoa B'Katzeo Kamagea Bahar Mosimos. which is really not just halacha insofar as the Maamar HaSinai, the original Maamar HaSinai is concerned, but it means a constant state of Sinai. It's a constant state of attempting to penetrate and to understand the essence of God's knowledge. So you see that the way a person approaches knowledge is extremely important. And basically most of the, practically all of the misconceptions that people arrive at is because they approach the area too uncautiously. So that's why Chazal gave out Isurim in studying certain areas and went to study certain areas like the Rashbaz, Takana, that a person shouldn't study any philosophical areas until he's 25, until he has a basis in Yahadus. And essentially, of course, without really knowing the method of learning and knowing what Torah gives us, there's Sisrei Torah, and then there's Torah which is Nigla. Nigla means halacha. Halacha, which means everybody can study the halacha. Everybody has a right to study. But until a person has a sound grounding in halacha, in other words, where a person knows what the nature of the thought is supposed to be like, a person becomes a baal halacha. He has an idea, an epistemology, so far as what thought is supposed to be like. So then, of course, it's much easier for him to know where he's venturing. Because when he sees that the area isn't unraveling itself the way it's supposed to, at least he has a model as to the way the ideas are supposed to appear. So if he ventures beyond a certain point, you can tell that he doesn't have his grounding. He's not capable of seeing the points clearly, so he should immediately back off. The area of Bechira, of course, is an area which involves philosophy and metaphysics, and Rambam really didn't even give an answer to the question they asked about Bechira for that reason. He just said Dasha Davaze Gadol Mene Maneyam or Rechava Maneyaretz. It's a very abstract area, and he didn't go into the Yad HaZara. But nevertheless, there is a point that I'd like to mention with regard to Bechira, because even in approaching these areas, a person must use Chachma. And if a person can understand something about the area, he should be satisfied in understanding that which he can and being able to the essence of the problem. But with regard to Bechira, I just wanted to mention that the way the Rabbeinu Yonah has it, and it seems clear that that's the concept in the Torah, the idea of Bechira is Uvacharta Vachayim. So he says that the Torah says, God says to man that he should make a choice between that which is life, which is the truth, reality, and the other part of man's nature, which is tied to his desires. So the only point I wanted to mention was that insofar as Bechira is concerned, we should have a basic idea of what the topic is about. See, many philosophers discuss free will, and the instances that they give of examples of what free will would be not exactly in line with the Torah's idea of free will. Okay? In other words, they will discuss the question of whether a person decides whether he should eat something, a certain food, or he should not eat a certain food. Does he have free will in determining whether he should or not indulge in a certain activity? You see. Now, according to Yahadus, it's not just any activity which involves the freedom of the will. So at least we should delineate wherein free will lies. Okay? Now, since the pasuk says that Rei Nasat Nefesh is Chaim Asimos, V'chart V'chaim L'man Tichyat of Zarecha, the Torah is telling you where in the choice lies. Now, the choice lies in the case in which he has before his soul the question of whether one activity is chayim or whether another activity is simply an activity of the physical part of man, which means to say that that is the only case in which free will exists. So that, for instance, a person will make a choice, will be confronted with a choice of whether he should, for instance, abstain from food in order that he should be healthy, or that he should look good, have a good appearance, be thin, or if a person should indulge in the enjoyment of food. So he's confronted with two conflicting desires. That instance doesn't really represent an instance of free will, because it's merely one emotion against the other. And as the Rambam says, even the desire for good health is basically a physical desire, no different than any other physical desire. This person wants good health, because with good health he can enjoy life, and he could extend his life. Extension of life is merely a physical desire. The only case where good health is a question of v'chata v'chayim is only where the only reason that the person wants the good health is in order to be able to be involved in Chachmas Hashem, be involved in Torah. But just to have good health per se is no different than any other physical desire. Or certainly the way a person appears. People are very conscious of their appearance. So the desire to look good has nothing whatsoever to do with the v'chata v'chayim. Unless the only reason the person wants to appear, have a good appearance, is because he represents Torah, and it'll make a difference insofar as other people are concerned. But not too many people are really motivated by that particular desire. You see. So therefore, when we're discussing free will, the question of one emotion against the other. One emotion against the other is not really a case of uvacharta v'chayim, not a case of bechira, where you have in front of you a choice between the good and the evil, because it's just a question of two different emotional desires. In such a case, there is no reason to assume that there is a freedom of the will, because such a case just represents a tug of war between two emotional forces. You see, and the determinist might very well be right in that case, that there is no, that the that case does not represent free will, but it's just a question of which emotion is stronger in terms of which will prevail. You see, the case of the Torah's idea of Bechira is a different concept altogether. What it means is, where a person is caught up between a choice, where he sees that he sees before him two worlds. One is the world that is depicted by his mind, by his chachma, and the other is the world that's depicted by his emotions. Two different worlds. In that case, we say that man has the freedom to choose between the world of chachma and between the world that's presented to him by his chachma, and between the world that's presented to him by his emotional desires. See, two different worlds come before the mind's eye, and the person has to make the choice between the two. There we say that the soul is free to choose that which the mind delineates as reality, and not that which his emotional nature delineates as reality. That is the instance of free will, you see. So what I just wanted to mention is not to go into the question of free will, but I wanted to define what precisely Yadus means by free will. It doesn't mean to say that Torah maintains that a person has a chooser in his nature, like a little machine that can choose between one and the other. Anything he wants to do, he can make a choice. That's not necessarily what the Torah says. Where it's a toss-up between simply two emotions, like whether I should refrain from eating something so that I should look good, or whether I should enjoy the physical desire. This is just a toss-up between two desires, or between good health or enjoyment of life. That's a question of which emotion is going to be more powerful. Over there, it might very well be that the stronger, it makes sense to say, that the stronger emotion will always prevail. It's just a matter of emotion. The case of Bechira, the difference is a very specific case. It's a case in which there's two different worlds presented to the individual, presented for the person's soul. The mind's eye grasps, sees two different worlds. That's the case of Bechira. So we should realize that it's interesting, but most of the philosophers that discuss free will haven't discussed it in that vein. The cases that they give are not cases of free will that the Torah would consider free will. It's simply a question of whether the will of man, what they call the will, very questionable what they call the will. There's even a question whether there is such a thing as a will, the way they understand it. It's a different concept altogether. It's important to know that the examples that I give them make a big difference. And I think that in the philosophical writings on the subject, one of the big problems is they don't define exactly what they're talking about when they speak about free will. In Yadis, you have a very concrete definition. The definition is that it's the area in which the soul is presented with two different options, two different ways of viewing reality. One is based upon the mind's depiction, and one is based upon the emotion's depiction. Only in that instance are we discussing free will. Not in the case of every choice a person makes. As a matter of fact, most people's choices who aren't really on a level where they're involved in the Melchemes Achayim. Melchemes Achayim is really a battle, a raging battle, as Chazal depicted, between the two different parts of man. The one part that's like a malach, that recognizes reality, and the other part that's like a behemoth. So there, the question, the point of free will comes into play. That man has the ability to follow. Man's soul has the ability, partakes, insofar as his mind partakes of Chachmas Elokim, and it's partaking of something which is beyond the physical, because Chachma gives us a picture of reality which explains the physical reality, and insofar as the soul is capable of perceiving that, then it is dealing with something that is, the soul itself is dealing with something which is non-physical. And so far as that is concerned, it's not subject to the laws of causality, because it's not a physical, you're not dealing with a physical entity. But where the soul is overcome by two conflicting emotions, there it's simply dealing with two physical desires of physical nature. Instincts, desires of physical nature. Animals have desire. So as far as that's concerned, there's nothing special about man's choice. But it's simply a very complicated, more complicated type of instinctual mechanisms. More complicated instinctual mechanisms. So therefore, it might not be so easy to determine, because you have to know the person very well, but nevertheless, the soul is not really involved. The soul is not really involved. It's just a question of which desire is more powerful and which will prevail. But it is not dealing with the question of v'chat v'chayim, which is where the individual sees before his mind's eye a totally different reality, different questions. What I'm saying is, I'm not going into the philosophical questions of free will, but I want to define what the Torah means by free will. It doesn't mean the same thing as the many philosophers, modern-day philosophers, discuss as to whether man has free will or not. It's a different type of a concept. And if you delve into the area, you'll discover that the type of mechanism or the understanding of the concept of free will very much depends upon this. It's a very basic point. So I thought that while we're on the subject matter, I just wanted to mention it's an important point in defining and opening up the area. Okay. Tzaddik is not moderate either. Tzaddik is not a very moderate. The mida per se is not really the solution. I mean, a person who's discipline could be a terrible thing. Like in the instance of Hitler. Hitler wasn't able to discipline himself in any way. There's no question about it. That the world would be in a better state. So these terms, like discipline and sincerity, they're only superficial values that the masses of people consider to be, for some reason, consider to be a value. But in many instances, they're not. It depends on the ultimate purpose. It depends on ultimately wherein the soul's desire lies. If the soul's desire is for evil, Haman was very disciplined. If the soul's desire is for evil, so then all the discipline is evil. So when a person like that is making a choice, he's merely making a choice between two evils, either to be disciplined and to accomplish his goal, which is treachery, in which case he's going to be committing the worst evil, or else to be undisciplined and satisfy his immediate desires. In which case, he will just be giving in to his another part of his nature, another emotional part of his nature. In some instances, it's better to be better if he wasn't disciplined. So that's a very important point. That you cannot accept what the masses praise. The terms that they use in terms of praise and blame is not based on any really thought out type of effort, but it's just something usually which caters to their own their own training from early youth, or their own ideas, but not anything of real value. What does the pasuk say? Pasuk about Avodah Shem Rino, when the evil are destroyed, is a wonderful time. You see, if an evil person dies, you're not allowed to sit shiva for him, you're not allowed to mourn him. On the contrary, you make a party. So life per se is not good. The reason why people think life is good is simply another emotional desire. Everybody wants to live. It's an instinct for survival. But that instinct itself is not good. So why people consider certain things inherently to be good is just because it's in line with their own emotions, but not because in reality it's the good. But Yadda's demands that we think into these things and then determine whether it really is good or not, not simply go by what our emotional desires are. So the only good is only the love of the truth, but not life, not the other things which our emotions tell us is the good. So I mean, who was worse, King Farouk or Hitler? And King Farouk spent his time as a glutton. He's a glutton, Bal Taiva. But he definitely was not as bad as Hitler, who was self-disciplined in certain areas. Yadis maintains that a person, after the Torah is given, especially, he named himself. So after the Torah was given to man, so the pasuk says that now you have been presented with that which is good and that which is evil, that which is life and that which is death. So it means to say that once a person has the Torah, so now he has before his mind's eye the Bechira, which means to say no doubt that without Matan Torah, man's Bechira would be extremely limited.
Extremely limited.
which means to say that many, many people would be spending their lives outside the realm of Bechira and just in the tug of war of their emotions. That's the pasuk, really. What does it mean? It means to say that after the Torah, you see, the Torah itself really supports this idea. Because what the Torah is saying is that after the Matan Torah, now man's Bechira has been brought into play. Which means to say, before that, there was no Bechira. Because what does it mean? There was Bechira before. The answer is that after the Torah was given, now, by God giving man the Torah, He enhanced his Bechira and placed him in a situation of Bechira. Whereas before Matan Torah, he wasn't even in that situation. You see? That's not to say, of course, there's the old question that was asked to Reb Chaim. I mean, what if a person is alone on a desert island, he has no knowledge whatsoever, what is his status insofar as Bechira is concerned? That's a difficult question to answer, a very difficult question to answer. But that only God can answer. It's for certain individual cases. What a person's realm of Bechira would be, had he no knowledge or whatever. But that's something which is, it's a hypothetical question. The fact remains that Matan Torah was, the reason why God gave Torah to man was to place before him the Bechira. The Pasuk says it openly, which means to say after the Torah is given, now we have a different realm of Bechira, and that was the purpose of Matan Torah. Why, you'll ask me a question, why is it that some people even after Matan Torah don't have the opportunity? We can't question such a thing, because just like you can't question why Matan Torah was given at a certain point and why some people are fortunate enough to be raised in a situation where they come in contact with Torah and other people aren't. This is God's knowledge. We can't answer such a question. But the fact that one who has the Torah has a different concept and different is in a different realm as far as Bechira is concerned, that we can ascertain with clarity. Yes, the question of where a person, what's predetermined, what's not predetermined, the Rambam says, whether it be a tzaddik or a rasha. That's right. But the type of rasha he's going to be in exercising his rishus, that isn't really mentioned. The rasha makes a decision between one maisa rasha and another maisa rasha, but where in both cases he's giving into the evil inclination, there's a question of which one. That's not a question of bechira. But the way the system of Yada sets us apart tremendously from the entire society, and especially today's society, because in today's society, you see that everything a person does seems to him to be a choice between good and evil. He thinks it's a choice between good and evil, and he considers the good that which is in line with his emotional desires, not based upon any analysis of what the good is. That's why the society will maintain, as maintains a certain figure, success is considered very good. Unsuccessful is bad. But the question is success in what? Nobody bothers to think about that. Success in what? As long as it's successful, it's good. Even a person who's a rusher is looked up to. You see, like an individual, now I just noticed recently that there's a biography of Roy Cohn. Okay? A couple of biographies of Roy Cohn. It was definitely without doubt a person whose entire life was taiva and rishis, and a person who was an opportunist at the expense of everybody else. But people look up to the individual. Why? Because he was able to accomplish something which, in the back of their minds, they would love to do: success, successful, power, fame, money, all the evils. But people are the society. It's a society. Basically, our society is a society that just wants to cater to the emotion, set up a value system based upon the emotion, which is exactly the opposite of the others. Plain and simple. All the morals and ethics and ethical terms which are used by the society are, according to the others, worthless and empty. You have to realize we stand apart tremendously from all the subtle type of philosophy that that you receive by reading the papers and by reading all the literature that exists in today's society and in today's world, because it's basically a society which is not based on the true concepts of what good and evil is. So anything that comes afterwards has to be false, and we have to realize we're tremendously apart from any of this, and we don't share in any way with their concepts of good and evil. Yes? As a matter of fact, that proves the point, because Yadis says that when does the Yetzer Tov enter a person? At the age of 13, right? When he's bar mitzvah. So that means that's the first time that he could be involved in Bechira. Because if he was able to be involved in Bechira before, you see, so then he would be culpable. You see, a katan is putter, a katan kol mitzvahs. Why? Because a katan is not considered a bar hochi, one who is able, who is capable of the process of Bechira. If he was capable of free will, he'd be culpable. But he's not. And yet every child makes choices. Every child makes choices. Children make choices. So why should a child's choice be any different than an adult's? In most instances it isn't. But the point is that you see that that type of a choice that the child makes is not really defined how, according to the Torah, as Bechira. Why? Because the child doesn't have the ability at that age to see or to be impressed with the world of reality that his mind depicts. He's too young. So it's just a tug of war between emotions. So he makes decisions too. But those decisions are not considered Bechira. That's differentiated. As a matter of fact, that's the proof of what we're saying from a halachic standpoint. You see that proves the concept of Bechira. The point is, just briefly, that where a person's mind sees before it the world that his chachma presents, okay, which is a different world of the good. The good is defined in abstract terms. And it gives him a different concept of reality, okay. And where his emotions are involved, so then the soul, which partakes, which can see before it the side of what the real good is, insofar as that is concerned, the soul was presented with the true good. That means that the immortal part of the soul has become involved in the process. Because the immortal part of the soul can only see that which is from the world of ideas. In other words, the world of ideas is the eternal world. The world of the physical is not the eternal world. Now, insofar as a person can perceive Chachma Salakim, so that part of his mind that perceives the Chachma is involved in the eternal ideas, not in the passing phases of the material world, but in the eternal ideas behind the material world that we see. So the mind is something which can perceive beyond the physical. Okay? Now, when his soul is presented with a choice between those two worlds, so insofar as his soul can perceive one side, which is the side of reality, true reality, so the soul must partake of that same eternal nature, since it can actually see before it that side. Okay? Now the soul here has the ability to follow that world. And its ability to follow that world is unimpeded. That's the concept of free will. It's not a chooser. See, it's a different concept. It means its ability to follow the world of ideas lies within its nature. It can do it. It can fail to do it. It can fail to do it. The really free will boils down to it's a different concept. It's not like a will that chooses between A and B. It means the ability of that part of man which is eternal to follow the eternal, or its failure to do so. It's a different kind of a concept than free will, the free will that the philosophers describe. The description doesn't fit into this category. The description is I could choose anything. Anything I do is my own choice. That's simply an egoistic kind of thing. And whatever I do is my own choice. Might not necessarily be true. A person, there are parts of the mind that a person is unaware of. Many times a person might make a decision. He's unaware of why he made that decision. because there's an unconscious part of the mind that he simply doesn't know what it is. You see, that's not really a concept. There's no real concept of free will in that case. But what the free will of the Torah describes is the ability of the soul to, so to speak, be true to the eternal part of its own nature and follow that part, or to fail to follow that part. That's the nature. That'll be the best description of the free will process. No, it's not predetermined. Not predetermined. And in the case of Paro, it seemed that way. But it presented, Moshe Rabbeinu presented to form the ideas of Yadus. Matter of fact, the Rav one time gave a shiur on that. He mentioned, he said, what was the idea? Beautiful concept. What was the idea that Moshe Rabbeinu said to Paro? He said, Gamata titen biyadeinu l'zvachim l'olos. You're also going to give zvachim l'olos that we're going to sacrifice to God. What a ridiculous, very absurd. I mean, how arrogant can you get? He should give zvachim l'olos to your God, let alone let you go. You see, it sounds like a nonsensical thing. And what was the whole idea that we should go 3 days in the midbar and we'll come back? What is it? A ruse? A false? Just a pretext? So he said, Rav said no. He said, really, Paro was given the choice. Paro was given the choice to become part of Kabbalah Satara. And really, what Moshe Rabbeinu presented before Paro was that and the Jews. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu presented him with. And he had a choice. He could have done that. That's why he says, You will recognize God. And you should give kabbonis. And if you give the kabbonis, then all of Egypt will see that your way of life is false and that you're really doing tshuva on your whole nonsensical type of idolatrous civilization, and you accept God. But Paro turned it down. There's one pasuk that seems to indicate clearly that idea. Where Paro, when he got angry, he said, Lo yadati es Hashem. V'gamas Yisrael lo ashaleach. What does it mean, Lo yadati es Hashem? It was a funny kind of a statement, Lo yadati es Hashem. So I think when you're in when you're learning in yeshiva as a child, they always tell you that Paro had a whole list of all the different gods. The Medrash says, and he checked. He says, no, I don't find God here. You know, the child was satisfied by that answer. You know, still remember, as a matter of fact. But on a more mature level, what it means to say is, Lo yadati es Hashem means that this idea of God does not fit into my emotional framework. That's what it means. Lo yadati. This idea of God that you're presenting to me does not fit into my... Because you can't tell me Lo yadati es Hashem. Every nation had their own gods in those days. What does that do, Lo yadati es Hashem? What do you mean you don't know that? This is our God. You have your gods, we have our gods. What are you saying, Lo yadati es Hashem? But that's a nonsensical statement. But Lo yadati es Hashem shows you that Moshe Rabbeinu was attempting to explain to Paro the idea of God. Paro simply rejected Lo yadati es Hashem. I don't understand that idea of God. It doesn't make sense to me, and I can only understand the idea of gods which have emotional appeal, and those are the gods of Egypt, and I don't know this type of God, and he rejected it. But you see from the statement of Lo yadati es Hashem that Moshe Rabbeinu made an attempt to explain to him the idea, the true idea of God, which he simply, in his frustration, would not permit himself to accept. So you see, the concept of Paro was, he was involved in a big choice. He was involved in a choice of following his emotions or following his mind. One thing I'll say is that the concept of free will is subject to variation of degree. But the fact that there's an Avraham Avinu shows you that Avraham Avinu, that man, it is, man has the capacity within himself to really unravel the idea of Chochma and the idea of Chochma Salakim. So therefore, you must say that there is a person's ability for free will does exist at every level. Yes, but not to the same degree as Efrem Antara. Not in the same way. Reason why Torah destroy is mitzvah, is sivu to destroy certain idolatrous societies and certain evil societies, is because the Torah is saying that exactly that life is not simply the good under any circumstances, and man's existence only has value if his existence takes on a certain form. If it doesn't, then he's better off not existing. That's the idea of the destruction of Rosh Hashanah. That's the concept. Yes. Yeah, that's it. That's right. Then you deserve life. Otherwise, life is not a blessing. Life is a curse. What I'm not. I just want to make one thing clear. I'm not discussing. There's a difference between whether a person has bechira or not, and whether and how much of a person's life is occupied in the process of bechira. Okay, there's a difference. In other words, a person. This Rabbi Shaul Salanta one time said. He said that a lot of times a person doesn't have vera, so he feels that he's not obligated. Why? Because his yetzer hara has driven him to such a point where he almost has no choice. He's completely evolved. I mean, could you demand of an insane dictator that he shouldn't kill a specific individual? This action is based upon his whole nature already, right? So Rasul Salanta says that the individual is chayev for every action he does, is obligated for every action he does, even though there was no bechira on particular actions that he did later. But the point is, the reason why he got to that point was because of the initial turn in bechira that he made. So a person is responsible for all the evil that results from a bechira he may have made 10 years ago. It's not necessarily a choice right now. You see? Does a Russia have a choice at a certain... Does a person who is the... person who's involved in Rishis, he have a choice? Does a Stalin have a choice not to kill a certain individual at a certain point? And he doesn't have a choice anymore. He's already given over to Rishis. He's committed to Rishis. He doesn't have a choice in that point. I mean, that's just a natural thing that follows from his whole stand and his whole personality, all his psyche, the way his psyche is structured at this point. But he's responsible for that individual act, for that individual murder, because that murder came about through a choice that he made many years ago. So he's responsible for all of the evil. Excuse me? No, I'm sorry. So what I'm saying is, it may be true that people on a certain level aren't making choices anymore. You see. But the point is, they're responsible for the initial choice that they made. That initial bechira, that initial choice they had at a certain point. Okay? And we can't know. We can't know in an individual way. I would describe it this way. In terms of the world's idea of free will, it's a question of an equal choice. Choice between A or B. In terms of Yadis, it's either a positive or the absence of a positive, negative. You see? It's either the person is moved towards the good or there's the absence of being moved. You see? Yeah, the pasuk seems that Yeris Dvar Hashem, Vashel lo som libo al Dvar Hashem. He wasn't moved by the Dvar Hashem. And the Makas borrowed. Okay, I would just like to add to what we said last week about the definition of free will. Okay? So, more important question is to define exactly what free will is, what one means by free will. I wanted to go a little further on that point. And say that from this you could see another development. And that is that the soul itself, if it chooses the world which the mind describes, then it's not simply a matter of choice in terms of following, like in terms of an action. But it actually partakes of that world of mind. And it itself becomes likened to that which it partakes of. So So that the soul, you see, in choosing the world of ideas, in choosing the world of thought, it changes its nature. It changes its nature and partakes of a world of thought and ideas. And therefore, free choice isn't just a matter of doing something, doing good or evil. It's not just a matter of an action. It's a matter of the whole nature of the soul is determined by the world which it follows. And its whole nature is changed. So that in every free choice that a person makes, it's not simply a matter of making a choice so he does a good thing. But the choice that he makes actually defines the soul itself, gives the soul its nature. That's why Chazal say, we mentioned Chazal many times, that the Rashi in Bukhuk Kosai, how a person goes through a steady process of deterioration. So Rashi mentions how it goes stage by stage, how it goes through a process of deterioration. The point is that it's a, and Rashi over here mentions also, even though we're not certain whether this is a Pirush Rashi or not, but the Rashi over here mentions Avera Duras Avera Metocha Siyasa Shel Zu Tikoshelo Ba'acheres V'tekrena Lo Shtayim Shekein Derech Shel Yetzer Hara Mosif V'Holech Lachshilo Ba'Avera Kedei Latar D'Menola. That's what it means. The Yetzer Hara is not Yetzer Hara doesn't simply cause a person. That's why we mentioned you can't make a company, you can't make any deal with the Yetzer Hara. It's impossible to say I'll do one Avera and that's it, because as soon as you partake of that Avera, that means the soul is partaking of a different world, and once it partakes of a different world, its nature has changed from the position it was before. So now all agreements that were made before don't hold anymore, because it's a different soul. That's what Rashi means. It's most of a holech. See? So most of a holech. So it's impossible for a person to make a compromise with the Yetzer Hara and say, that's it, I'll just do this much. Most of a holech. Most of a holech because the nature of the soul changes. Now, in this respect, I would say we have to modify what we said last week. Explanation. But we just have to make one, there's one point that it must be made clear, and that is that if the soul decides against the world which is portrayed by the mind, the world of ideas, and it follows the world of the emotions, then the soul itself partakes of that world. If the soul itself partakes of that world, and that is the deterioration of the soul. Therein lies the deterioration of the soul. Okay? So it's not simply a question of acting or not acting at all. In other words, if the soul follows the world of ideas, then it's exercising its free choice, its free will, in following that world. If it fails to, then it follows the other world of emotions, and it partakes of that nature. And that is the deterioration of the soul. There are different levels of rejection of the world of ideas. Different levels of rejection. What's the right one? It's an interesting point. The question we're raising is on Rashi and Bukhuk Kosai, where Rashi gives the deterioration of Rimbu Kosai the muscle. So he lists the seven stages. Lo Ramad, first he doesn't learn. Lo Asa, then it's Moes Bacher Ma'osim, despises others that do mitzvahs. Son Es HaChachamim, he hates the wise men. And then he prevents others from doing mitzvahs. Then he denies the mitzvahs. And then he denies God. So really, he should have just had four. Lo lamad lo asa. And then also, he's kofar b'mitzvahs. He denies mitzvahs. And then he's a covered bakery, the nice guy. What does he care about others? What's he concerned about others? What is he concerned about others?
What?
It's interesting. If you look through, we just did the Megillah. In the Megillah also, you have a very strange phenomenon. You have by Achashverosh. So it says, when Achashverosh brought out the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash. So Chazal say, why did he bring out the Kalim? As a matter of fact, brought the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash. So he said that now there's no problem because of the fact that 70 years have gone by and the and God didn't fulfill his promise to redeem the Jews, and now I can take out now I won't, nothing's going to happen to me if I take out the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash. I believe it's on the pasuk v'esyikar teferes gedul aso. I think on that pasuk Chazal say that what does it mean? He put on the begadim of the kain gadol. Put on the begadim of the kain gadol. And then you just wonder. I mean, why is he doing that? I mean, what is he? Here's a man is a interested in power and taiva. So what is he do? What is he bothering the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash? I'm sure that you can find something nicer than the Big Day Kohen Gadol. Where you can make a person can make up the garden that looks nicer than the Big Day Kohen Gadol. The Big Day Kohen Gadol are nice, but they're basically structured halachically a certain way. I mean, it's not the style, not the most stylish begadim. But you see, he was obsessed with this man. Put on the begadim of the Kohen Gadol. And you see also, Haman was also obsessed with this type of a thing. That the fact that it came out in the 7th, Hippo, it's the month. The fact that it was Chodesh Adar, Samach Simcha Gedola. Kivin Shnafel Pur B'Chodesh Adar, Samach Simcha Gedola. He's very happy. Omai, Nafel Lipur B'Yerach Shemais Moshe. Lo Ye Yedeya Shebeshiva Baden Old Moshe. Okay. So, you see, he was very happy because the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu died in that month. You see. And then also, you see that when he failed, so immediately it says that Vayomalo Zeresh Ishto V'Chol Ovo Inmi Zera Yehudim Inmi Zera Hayehudim Vayasapam Zeresh Ishto Eish Kol Shagil V'Chacham Zeresh Ishto Mizera Yehudim Marecha Shechlos V'Lom Palafon Lo Suchalo Enough old people lafona. See? So you see that in the Zerah HaYehudim, you see from the Pesukim themselves, not just from the Chazal, but you see from the Pesukim themselves that there was an obsession with the idea of the Jews and the idea of the Torah itself, with the Klei HaMikdash and with the Kohen Gadol's Begadim and with the month that Moshe died. And you see that when he fell, so when he was falling, so then his wife said that in the Zerah HaYehudim. You see, they're obsessed with the idea of the Jews. There's like an undercurrent and an unconscious type of obsession going on. So, it's an interesting thing. Why is this so? It's the same kind of idea as over here. By the person as he deteriorates, he's concerned not just the process in which he's objectively involved in denying God, but it's a process where he's disturbed. So there's some disturbing feature within him that bothers him about the system of Yadus. Why should it bother him? The answer is because part of the human soul cannot, even though the soul can make a choice, and the soul can choose to not to follow the world of ideas, but it cannot completely remove itself from that world. So a part of that world always remains as recognized by the soul and as a disturbing feature. And the Russia makes an attempt to overcome that disturbance. So he makes strong attempts to overcome that disturbance. And that's what Chazal means when he was obsessed with the Klei HaMikdash and with the Big Day Kahuna and Haman with the Jews, was an obsession because there was one part of them that recognized, or that was starting to recognize, at least it had a hold on the recognition that maybe there's something there to these ideas. As a matter of fact, you see the Gemara says in Megillah that Ahasuerus had tremendous respect for the Chachmei Yisrael, because when Vashti sinned against him, so it says he called the Chachamim. And the Gemara says, who's the Chachamim? So the Chachamim were Chachmei Yisrael, Sanhedrin. And he says, what should we do with him? What should we do with Vashti? Where he's supposed to be good Chachamim. They're telling him what to do. So the Chachamim convened and they decided like this. What? So he knew. Yeah, the Gemara is in his base and the base of Megillah. Vayom ha-mal chachamim. So the Gemara says, man chachamim, who are these chachamim? Rabbanim. Yodei ha-itim, she yodin la-aber shonim v'lekvo ha-chadashim. Okay, Sanhedrin. Amalu, he said, dainu alu. He said, I want you to judge her from me. Amru, so they got together and they convened, they just started to discuss this question. So they said like this. They said, this is not a good thing for us. Hei chinavim. What are we going to do? Name a lay kotla. Should we tell him to kill her? He's deserving of death. Lamacha pasuk lechamra. Your boy alamina. Tomorrow his wine will wear off, and he's going to come and he's going to be angry at us. Have we killed his wife? So name a lay shavta. What are we going to say? Leave her alone. Then he's going to hate us because we don't take up for the respect of the king. So they said, this is not a very good deal. Either advice that we give, we're stuck. So they said, they gave him an answer, a political answer. They said like this. They said that, they gave him a marshal. They said that the, said if wine stays, if a good wine stays in its own cask for many years, you keep pouring the wine from one cask to another, it loses its flavor, loses its quality. So he said that we are a nation that was poured out from one place to another. Of course, we were in Gullus, and we're not really the right ones to ask. You should ask Amon and Moab, that they've been in the same place for all these years. They really are better ones to consult about this question. So you see that Ahasuerus had a recognition of the Chacham, had a recognition of the Chacham. And the answer is really there. Every Russia has to have that recognition. And the obsession with the Jew is really an attempt to overcome the conflict that he's caught in by his choice. Because his choice to follow the emotions is only one part of him. The soul remains disturbed and unhappy. And he tries to destroy, to wipe out that part of the soul which has that recognition. This will be in line with what we said last week, that free will, the choice of free will, is not a choice, a simple choice between doing A or B, but that the nature of the soul is really akin to the world of Chachma, and it's fulfilled by following the world of Chachma. If it doesn't follow the world of Chachma, it's true that it partakes. Of course, this is, we're doing a very metaphysical subject. We can't clarify my point. But the only thing we can say is the following, that it can't simply partake of the world of the emotions and the world of the physical and then become completely as the world, and become completely a part of that world. In other words, the soul itself will always remain in conflict. The only way, because of its nature is really, when it makes the choice to follow the world of ideas, it's being true to its nature. When it chooses the other way, it's violating its nature. So therefore, a part of it will always remain against itself and has to be in conflict. That's why the pasuk says, "V'Hashem Kayam Nigrash," that the Hashem are turbulent. They're turbulent because there's a part that they can't appease. Because there's a part of man that knows that the world of ideas is the real world. And that's why it says, that's why it goes like that. Lo lama v'lo asa. He doesn't do himself. But the next step is mo'es b'cherem osa. So he has to despise. There's a hatred against those that do. Why? Because those that do bring to the mind's eye the conflict. The conflict. You see. And that's why it's only as a chachamim. And what? And then it's only as a chachamim. Then it's mo'es b'cherem osa. And finally, it's the denial of the mitzvahs, and then kol kibbutz, the denial of God. But the whole process, once the soul makes the choice to follow the path of the emotions, the next stages that it goes through are stages of attempt to overcome the conflicts. It's an attempt to overcome the conflicts. That's what the Chazal said. Okay. That's true. The fact that it's a deteriorating process, and the first major choice is where he fails to learn. that is the essence of his decision. The essence is the first step. In because of teilecho, shetiyam el matara means you're following chachma, and in because the muscle means you deny chachma. Once you deny chachma satara, then the rest of the next stages that follow are simply a process of deterioration in which he's attempting to reconcile the denial, the first denial. But the real choice is in the first step, in the Chutzpahs, where he fails to follow Chachmas, fails to learn and to follow and pursue Chachmas Torah. So Achashverosh, when he put on the clothes of the Kohen Gadol, was an attempt to deny the reality of Klal Yisrael. That was the whole thing of taking out the Kelim of the Beis Hamikdash, because the conflict is always there. It was to show, demonstrate. You know, to demonstrate that the Kohen Gadol's clothing aren't special, the big day Kohen Gadol, these are the big day Kohen Gadol girls supposed to use, be used in the Beis Hamikdash Lefnai V'Lefnim and the Avodas Yom HaKippurim. These are the big day Kohen Gadol. No, there's nothing. I could put them on myself. See? It was attempt to deny, and using the clay Hamikdash was this. That's what does it mean using the clay Hamikdash? It means using them as chol. It means to say that they have no. There is no reality of a specific halachic designation to an object. It was an attempt to prove and to demonstrate that's why she said, she became a great tzaddikus. What kind of a thing is this? The answer is that pasuk reveals that there was an obsession all along with the Jews. There was an ongoing conflict all along, but it was constantly suppressed. Only later it emerged when she saw that there was what? Chodesh Adar, Chodesh Megev, Ma'isba Moshe Rabbeinu. What do they care about Moshe Rabbeinu? The answer is they care. There's an obsession. The same reason why a country like Russia will go crazy to make sure that Jews don't have matzah on Pesach. If you hear from the Jews. Same thing exists today. Same idea. Or that Jews shouldn't get any pair of tefillin. Some Jew somewhere in Russia put on a pair of tefillin, so the criminal will go crazy. What do they care? It sounds like it's absurd. What difference does it make? It's crazy. It's not a big government and a few people that put on some leather straps. What's the difference? And the answer is the obsession is there. Same obsession. Psychological phenomenon. It's an attempt to wipe out and to deny the reality of the ideas of Yadis. And it exists today just like it existed then. Same phenomenon. That's a mullet. That's basically a mullet. Okay. What? All right. So the truth of the statement of Chazal is not one that the paragraph Gimel. It's not one that most people accept. They don't live by it. The idea that Alti Bazl Chaladan, that every person, you never tell when I could need him. I might need him at some point. You see, so most people don't really like to live according. They recognize it might be true, but they don't live according to that principle. Now, the reason why they don't is not simply they're totally irrational. But they feel it's not worth it. Because they feel that the chances of me ever needing this guy is very slim. And if I'm going to live this way, So it comes out that I have to be subservient to everybody. So what kind of a life is it? So I'm not a free man anymore. But basically, I'm a subservient person to every individual. So I'm an evit to every... got a line, I told them off, I put them in place, and that's it. You probably have to say that, yeah, but one second, man, you just got me there one day. The chances are very slim. Meantime, I enjoyed, I enjoyed putting them in place, and on the contrary, it could be even worse. If you have to be worried about every little person, what kind of a life is that? What kind of independence is that? This is not worth it. So I'll miss out one time in a valley. But it's worth it. That's when most people live it. It's a luxury. They want to have the luxury of being able to be independent and say, "Who are you? I don't need you," and that's it. Yeah. And it would seem to be that if you think about it rationally, that in their framework, they're right. Because really, it's a very psychologically difficult state to live in. You worry about everybody's in play. You have hundreds of people that you have to answer to. And it's not a life. It's like a type of person that wants to have a million friends. A person wants to have a million friends. There's no life. Because he has to... go around all days, all the time, constantly about whether this one likes him or that one likes him, and maybe only this person, maybe only that person. So it's a life in which there's a tremendous amount of pain. It's not worth it. Most people would agree that it's not worth it. Be independent. Heck with everybody. So you won't get a favor from this guy 20 years from now if it ever happens. Oh, forget about it. See, Alti Boz L'Choladam doesn't just mean not to insult him. Alti Boz L'Choladam means you shouldn't undervalue every person. You know what I mean? Alti Boz doesn't just mean, because it just doesn't make any sense to say don't insult him. But don't be concerned about him at all. That's no good either, because let's say, for instance, not a matter of insulting him, but the fact is, you did something which is, in which you overlooked him, or whatever, or he's upset about you. So say, no, sugar, he's upset about me, but I don't know, what do I care? But the, so why should I be concerned about every little individual? Why should I be concerned about every little individual? It doesn't make any sense from a rational standpoint. The pain is not worth it. It's not worth it. She'ein locha odom, she'ein lo shah. Everyone comes in handy at one time or another. it sounds like a Machiavellian type of principle. You know what I mean? She'ein locha odom, she'ein lo shah. Right? And yet, I mean, enough, it doesn't seem like it's a worthwhile type of principle to follow. Yeah. You have to understand also what is this doing in Pirkei Avos? Just political advice. You know, where's the perfection involved? So the answer I think we gave once before. The same concept, basically. The concept is that the pain involved, see, it's not really, you have to, when you estimate psychological pain, you have to do it very carefully, because you have to know from which part of your psyche the pain is coming, okay? And most of the time, there is a disguise that takes place. I would say this is probably responsible for most people's inability to understand themselves or to act rationally with regard to themselves, because they can't isolate and locate what exactly is going on in themselves and which part of their nature, from which part of their nature certain emotions are coming forth. Now, see, over here, this is a very good case. Like, if you tell most people this advice, they'll say, look, I can't be worried about everybody. I haven't got time for that. That's not, this is, the advice is not good. I'm a busy man. I haven't got time to worry about this thing and that guy. Now, in the answer, the man will bring in time. And most people will immediately step back. You're right. You're a busy man. You're doing a lot of important things. You see? And you just haven't got the time? Sounds like a practical answer. But the truth of the matter is that this is a disguise. It's not really the truth. It's not the time. A person, when he doesn't have a realistic point, he will always choose something which appears realistic, and he will convince himself and others that that is the reason. Same thing over here. A person will say, I don't have the time to be worried about everybody. It's not as if he's using this time to such great advantage. Not that he's making such great use of the time. The truth of the matter is, it's not that he's lacking the time. He's lacking the emotional ability to do it. Because emotionally, it hurts him because he can't stand to condescend to others. Why should I condescend to this guy and treat this guy as if he's on my level and treat 100 other people as if they're on my level? It's really the emotional pain that he experiences. But he'll use time as a rationale. But it's not really the time. It's not as if he's making such a good use of his time. So a person who lives in that framework where he has the emotional pain, it's not really the time to bother, it's the emotional pain of giving importance to others and not being able to give his ego the freedom and not being able to enjoy the comparative status of his ego vis-a-vis other people's ego, which is basically what a person wants to enjoy, the fact that he's superior, and not being able to do that, to allow himself that luxury and to have to place everybody on a pedestal equal or higher than him in his actions, that is where the pain stems from. The time, he doesn't mean really time. What he means is that emotion is very... See, time depends upon how much energy is invested in the area. So the person doesn't have the time. It means the emotional anguish will take up a lot of time. But it's not really the time per se. So what Chazal is saying is like this, that if a person is free from these emotions, and a person really just looks at the world in terms of chachma per se, so he's an individual who just looks at the world in terms of chachma, so he has to realize that people are of a certain nature, and he's not in competition with the people. But the people are simply individuals that he must act with in accordance with their nature. And in accordance with their nature, to the best of his own, to his own advantage and to their own advantage. You see, according to the system of Yadas. But he's not emotionally involved in terms of considering them a part of his own reality. They don't affect his own reality. He simply looks at the people and he acts in a way like a general would act with his troops. But not in terms, he doesn't take them seriously. You see, in terms of their value system. He doesn't take their value system seriously. So therefore there's no anguish. If he doesn't take their value system seriously, so then he just acts with them in accordance with rational pursuit, so then he will it doesn't bother him. The emotions don't bother him. And he'll find that there's plenty of time really to act in a way that he even the smallest person, he could take into consideration, he could be nice to him. And it's a worthwhile activity. Why should he lose that? Now the idea also, there's another point here. The idea that Ein L'chadim Shem L'sho is not as far-fetched as it sounds. You might say, well, it's a far-fetched thing, Ein L'chadim Shem L'sho. The truth of the matter is that the emotions of the man are used. I will never need this guy. This will never happen. There's an assumption that a person feels and senses as a part of his egoistic nature that certain things in reality simply he reduces the level of possibility in his mind. Even though, objectively, if he would actually take a poll, he'd find out that there is a certain level of probability. But the level of probability is reduced by his emotions. So that's what the Chazal say, basically. That a person who is totally rational will not reduce the level of probability, so there is and in terms of his life, it's worthwhile to pursue. As long as he's not involved with the emotion, you see, so then he will act rationally in that way. So that's what Chazal means when they say that Shem V'chadim Shem V'sha. It means that's the rational way to be. Rational way to be is, okay, it's a far-fetched possibility, but the fact is, why should I lose that on that point? But you'll tell me, but if this is the case, I have to be a slave to every person? The Chacham is not a slave to every person. To the Chacham, every person is merely an object in reality that he must act towards in a rational way. And it's simply action, like any other action. So therefore, that's the sign of the Chacham. Well, I think it was either Sadia Goyen or one of the Rishonim that mentions that the Chacham acts towards people in a totally rational framework, that he's not involved at all with their value system, and therefore, since he acts rationally, he acts in a way which is beneficial to himself, and of course is beneficial to the people as well, because the system of Yadas dictates that we must act in a way that's beneficial to everybody. But certainly insofar as being beneficial to himself, there's no reason why he should throw it away. So basically that's the basic idea of the memra. Alti baz l'choladam. Alti b'yimaflu l'choldover. Alti maflu l'choldover is an extension of is the other idea. Alti maflu l'choldover means to say something will never occur. It's rochet. That's not going to happen. That idea that's not going to happen stems from the narcissistic part of a person's nature, part of a narcissistic personality. Alti maflu l'choldover. This is not going to happen. Don't worry about that. It's not going to happen. That's just an emotional part of man which twists and distorts reality and gives him different readings on the probabilities than the actual readings. The Chacham doesn't involve himself in that. Chacham knows he has to know exactly what the probabilities are and deal with them according to the reality. And he doesn't allow his emotions, his narcissistic emotions, to simply deny what is going to occur in reality. It means in terms of pursuing your objectives. An individual might put in a good word for you. Because of that good word, you might be able to get a job so you can sit and learn. So every possibility should be maximized. There's an emotion on the part of man to minimize those chances, the chances insofar as events are concerned that go against the self. So the human nature wants to minimize that possibility. As if the whole universe is based upon his desires. And because he is involved in this activity, and this activity is what he wants, is the source of his desire, that's his goal, somehow or other the world's not going to interfere with his goal. It's a crazy emotion. So therefore what he does is he minimizes the probabilities of certain things occurring. So that's what it means. He's a mafli. He says that's far-fetched that it's going to happen, but it's not based upon a realistic evaluation. It's based upon his own narcissistic ego. And that's really part of Alti Baz L'Choladam. Because that's why he's a buzz, because he doesn't care. Because the chance of this person ever helping you is very remote. You see?
That's all.